The best podcast in baseball is brought to you by Closets by Design. Update your closet, garage, office, pantry, and more. Imagine your home totally organized with Closets by Design. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
On the other hand, empty seats are empty seats. No shows are no shows. And I think this, you know, when you're just accepting reduced attendance and you're pointing to that for reduced payroll, now you're setting yourself down for a spiral downward business-wise. And for a franchise that's tied to a lot of other business around the ballpark, I find that really interesting. I understand to retool, the winter warm-up's a chance for the franchise to do some different type of messaging, more positive messaging. So I think fans are ready for a change, a more dynamic type of baseball.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the best podcast in baseball, brought to you by Closet by Design of St. Louis. I'm St. Louis Post-Dispatch baseball writer Derek Gould, joined this week again by our instant offense, our online sports columnist, our everything from tip sheet to hockey columns to chiming in on baseball development. It's Jeff Gordon of STLtoday.com. Boy, I totally botched that, Jeff. It's Jeff Gordon of STLtoday.com and the St. Louis Post-Dispatch. Who better to talk about? It's development that I want to talk to you about as soon as I get like the marbles out of my mouth. Sorry about that, Jeff.
Well, there's a lot of excitement going to this season, I suppose, for spring training. But boy, some guys better come through. they're banking on a lot here, Derek. They're banking on a lot of development. And 2005 will be most interesting. One of the more interesting years we've seen in the Cardinals in a couple decades.
I like that you use the verb banking there, because to date, the Cardinals have spent exactly $0 on major league free agents. They're one of the few teams who just have not waded in to the market at all. There are, of course, a couple of reasons for this. The big one is they continue to search for a trade for Nolan Arenado to shed his salary and to find him a spot. You know, the Boston Red Sox, meanwhile, are a fit in every way for him. They're just waiting also then on Alex Bregman. So everything's kind of hung up on free agent Alex Bregman and where he signs, and then what opportunities are there and what interested parties are there that Nolan Arenado will accept a spot with, and if they can then work out a deal that is palatable to both him and the Cardinals. So that it could be a really crazy and frenetic 24 hours after Bregman signed, and it all could end with Nolan Arenado there in Jupiter and the Cardinals not having any sort of salary relief unless they then move a starter. Another part of that, though, is that they were forced to spend some money by signing their arbitration eligible players. They went 3-for-6. They were able to work out agreements with Ryan Helsley going into his final year before free agent, and he got a substantial raise, $4.4 million. Just a remarkable raise, helped set the bar for the relievers that will follow him. John King signed and Jojo Romero signed. Both of them got significant bumps as well for their work from the left side of the bullpen. The players, Jeff, who didn't sign are Lars Nootbaar, Brendan Donovan, and Andre Pallante. And it's there where I kind of want to begin the conversation. They're headed to for hearings with the Cardinals. That's their file and trial approach, unless they're able to work out a multi-year extension as the Cardinals did with Tommy Edman. Of those three, Jeff, who intrigued you most for a multi-year extension?
Right. Well, they're all, it's all interesting because I think Brendan Donovan is an established talent. You know, the very worst you have with him is an extremely versatile guy, plays all over the field, does a decent job in the field at multiple positions, works at bats, is a tone setter, is a fit chemistry. I think he's the most known quantity. Mm. The intriguing guy is Lars Nootbaar. This team has had like 406 outfielders here the last several years. And they keep waiting for somebody to become a breakout to really reach a level where you could say, okay, this is a cornerstone. They've been through quite a few to try to get to that point. He shows signs of being a potentially being that guy, does a lot of things well, but staying healthy and maybe developing a bit more on the power side would really make all the difference for him. So I think he's still a bit undefined. And Pallante is just fascinating because he's an unorthodox pitcher, spent a lot of time on the mental side of the game. Is a very it made some really interesting and effective adjustments to his physical side, and just a different type of pitcher who was fun to watch break out last year.
Yeah, he went to the minors, bet on himself, And also bet on the innings that he could get there to really work on offering up different pitches that he could use then to get right-handed batters out. That was key. And in doing so, he just radically changed his, the view of him and his spot on, for him on the depth chart. You know, he goes from a guy who was sort of the counterintuitive right-hander out of the bullpen to foil with matchups for a team to now part of the rotation going into the 2025 season. And really even a guy who they're counting on, or, you know, kind of elevating his game in the rotation. You know, that is part of why, you know, his arbitration is so interesting. That's also part of why he's eligible at all for arbitration. Andre Pallante is a super two, which means that he qualified because he's at the highest level of service time for players between that 2 year and 3 year. 3 year players or players with 3 years of service time are automatically eligible for arbitration. They have arbitration eligibility for after their third year, fourth year, fifth year, and then become free agents, just to give people background. But a select group of the high end 2 year service time players like Pallante are eligible. And that means that, you know, any week here or there or 2 weeks or fortnight here or there, he wouldn't have been. So that's a raise that he's getting when he would have been closer to the league minimum this coming year, just because he was able to assert himself in the minors and return when he did and then never go back because he was a starter. Where do you think this goes for these three guys, Jeff, in terms of how their performance this year could shape this conversation next year?
Well, there's a few things to look at. The one thing, immediate issue, you mentioned Nolan Arenado. If he does not leave and he does stay with the team, at least for the time being, the whole idea of playing Donovan every day at second base, Nolan Gorman at third base would be a good option for this team to try to see if this is foundational for them going forward, at least until J.J. Weatherholt gets here. Mm-hmm. Boy, if Nolan comes back and the other Nolan has to play some second base and now he's a super utility guy, that's a big difference between super utility and playing every day, right? So that's where I want to see, where does Brendan land? Does he have enough to be an everyday guy? That's intriguing. And again, you know, Newt Barr with his upside. And then just with Pallante, when you look at guys who are number five starters, who are veterans, number five guys getting eight digits, and then guys who are number four starters, veterans, getting upwards of $20 million in the free agent market once you're established, there's so much there for Andre to achieve financially if he can turn mm-hmm. that corner. You just look over at his teammate, Miles Michaelis.
There is one outcome where Brendan Donovan is an everyday player and Nolan Gorman is an everyday player and Nolan Arenado is third base, and that is Lars Nootbaar plays center field. Does this need to be part of the conversation here? I had a chance to catch up with Lars briefly this past week, talked with him. You know, he said it hasn't come up to him. You know, his workouts aren't exactly like positional specific when it comes to center, left, right. It's more, you know, explosive and speed and things like that. And, you know, the work on his swing that he's doing. He's relocated and he's working with a trainer this year on that speed element and on that durability element. But if he can play center, that unlocks the possibility of playing time elsewhere for folks if Nolan Arenado is still on the team. But doesn't that also kind of maybe maximize to what Lars could bring?
Well, it certainly creates his value. If you can play a decent center field and then provide offense for this franchise in particular, that's a big deal because, Ciani and Victor Scott II, they can run all day, and Ciani's a brilliant fielder, but there's a limit offensively unless Victor Scott II proves otherwise. You have to worry about your center field production, and you worry about having two spots potentially in your batting order that don't generate much offense if you're looking at that possibly being a situation at catcher too. So if you're using Pais there. So it is intriguing. If he can play center, for me, I still think I want to see more in the outfield than Brendan Donovan's high. The ceiling he has as an outfielder is still suboptimal. You still need more outfield pop. But boy, if Lars can play center, it changes everything. And if he can become the player that Dylan Carlson was supposed to become without the switch hitting, he could make some big time money here.
What do you make, Jeff, of the fact the Cardinals have spent $0 on free agents does it, you know, this late in the season, this late in the offseason, this late in the market? It has been a sluggish market since the heady days of the winter meetings. You know, everything kind of now focus on Sasaki and Bregman, who's the holdup there with Nolan Arenado. What do you make of them spending not a cent yet on free agents?
Well, the one thing, and I mentioned it last time, Derek, was if I was running the show, I would have tried to find some money. And I know there's this budgetary situation. They haven't traded Arenado, and they're still looking at other pieces of their payroll. But to me, they need one more pitcher. And I mentioned it last time, just because you are counting on guys coming back and performing well. You're counting on Pallante. You're hoping that one of your young pitchers steps in. You're hoping that, you know, obviously Sonny Gray's an ace. There's no question about that. You've got some assuredness with your group, but you never have enough. And then the fall off, for me, the scary part, if you're the organization, is all the guys you were counting on to provide depth, with the exception of Quinn Matthews, just weren't durable last year in the minors. One after another, you know, Roby and Hence in particular, just who you really thought had high ceilings, weren't healthy. So I would have wanted to see more protection at the starting rotation. Otherwise, you've got all the position players you need. I mean, you've got for an organization that's been maligned for its poor player development, you've got a whole team full of guys you develop pretty much. So as far as positionally, so that part doesn't concern me as much as you could really be in trouble with your pitching. And they've always sold themselves short on relief pitching. They've always managed to come up a little short there. Last year was a pretty good bullpen for them. I worry about this bullpen if I'm a Cardinal fan.
Yeah, they don't really have that clear. I mean, I guess a year ago at this time they had Kittredge, and you figured that would be the setup guy, but it wasn't really the idea that they committed Ryan Helsley to the ninth inning until spring training. Now we know the benefit of that, so you kind of expect the same, and you go, okay, is the bridge still as sturdy? You know, there isn't the Middleton addition. Obviously, he didn't provide much because of an injury last year. Kittredge set a club record for holds, which was direct prelude to Ryan Helsley setting the club record for saves with 49. So who does that? Ryan Fernandez, Matthew Libertor, Jojo Romero. These are some of the guys in the mix for that. Does a McGreevy find that role if he's not in the rotation? Does a Graceffo take over that role? Or do some of these other young men, you know, Roy Croft, for example, who pitched in, who had cameos, do they take a part in that? The Cardinals are still shopping. You know, John Mozeliak, well, still shopping. I guess they're relatively shopping. They haven't spent yet, so it's hard to say, but they have at least a shopping list. Let's say that. The Cardinals have a shopping list. John Mozeliak said on Camel X that he'd like a right-handed bat. You know, we've written about in the Post-Dispatch and at stldata.com that they're in the market for a reliever and would like to kind of move on one of the guys who has high upside. You know, I find a Leclerc very fascinating, the young pitcher that was a big part of the Texas Rangers run to the World Series, part of their closing group there. I also wonder where they're going to get a left-handed bat or a backup shortstop, and if the two of those combined and they make like a Crawford-like move at spring training. That sure seems like something they would do, but it's all contingent apparently on moving money. How much should fans be alarmed, Jeff, of where the Cardinals' actions say they're going with cutting costs?
Well, it's the combination of the reality of it, where you're sending guys away. You know, you tell Lance Lynn you're not coming back, Kyle Gibson not picking up your option, Paul Goldschmidt, you know, best of luck. You've already trimmed off some guys. You've made it very clear you're trying to move Arenado as much of that contract as you can. I mean, that's a reality. But the other problem they have is the messaging hasn't been the best. And I think that's something we all harp on. And, you know, and some of that's overstated. There's an echo chamber of negativity in social media and the clickbait websites that just feed that with a percentage of the fan base. On the other hand, empty seats are empty seats. No shows are no shows. And I think this, you know, when you're just accepting reduced attendance and you're pointing to that for reduced payroll, now you're setting yourself down for a spiral downward business-wise. And for a franchise that's tied to a lot of other business around the ballpark, I find that really interesting. The messaging for all of the other partners, business partners in the ballpark village area, I think I have to be equally concerned too. I mean, I understand a retool, but this has come off, hasn't been presented, I think, as well as it could be for fans. Now, this the winter warm-up's a chance for the franchise to do some different type of messaging, more positive messaging. So I think fans are ready for a change, a more dynamic type of baseball, and to see some of the young guys develop if they can, because last year's team did get to the nucleus, got stale. But is there commitment, Derek? And I think that's what you see in your chats and with your feedback on social media.
Yeah, and what happens, Jeff, if this doesn't work?
Yeah. What if they can't play? What if it turns out these guys have all hit their ceiling, particularly Walker and Gorman with his strikeouts, and if Victor Scott II can't come on and win, is that's the best he's going to be, and maybe even less, and Weatherholt's not the guy they hope? What if all of those things happen?
Imagine your home totally organized. Closets by Design is offering 40% off plus an additional 15% and free installation. Schedule your free consultation today. Call 1-800-BY-DESIGN for details. That's 1-800-BY-DESIGN.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.
If you work in quality control at a candy factory, you know strict safety regulations come with the job. It's why you partner with Grainger. Grainger helps you find the high quality and compliant products your business needs to inspect, detect, and help correct issues. And the sweetest part is, everyone gets a product that's as safe to eat as it is delicious. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What I mean, I'm not, it's not rhetorical. What does happen? I mean, if they have, they clear all this playing time, they clear all this space, you know, they are clearing at bats and they want to clear positions on the position player side for the young guys to play. What if it doesn't work out? What if they don't perform, or they don't seize the opportunity? Is it just kick the ball down another year, or does it lead to more radical change on the first year of Heim Bloom's watch?
Yeah, there's so much work to do and work that's being done, and he's going to have some grace. I mean, the good thing for Heim is that, you know, whatever, if this thing goes the wrong direction, then Mo's got to wear it, right? Mozeliak's got to wear it, and Heim's off in the background building up. Obviously, you have to hit on this high pick you've got coming up this summer. You're going to have to get an impact player. Your guy you took last year has got to become an impact player. So, but yeah, then what? Are you looking at a long-term cycle? Are you going to become the Cincinnati Reds, where you're starting to, you know, get stuck into a place that's not comfortable for your fan base? Or are you going to be resourceful like the Milwaukee Brewers, Derek, where you can go out and find value, something that Bloom's done in the past, and find ways to go get guys that quickly and turn things? I mean, look at the Royals. They had a lot of young guys, and they also went out and bought a bunch of veterans, and they were able to flip it pretty quickly. Of course, the key was, you got a superstar to build around, and finally you got some young pitching to turn the corner. Great. Still, they did a lot of things to speed the process up. And just like the Brewers did some resourceful things, the Cardinals could do as well.
When you look at you know, what the Cardinals are betting on here, I find it interesting that they're doing it this way, in the sense that, you know, they're somewhat like the Blues, right? They know the who's going to take over, right? After the current general manager / president of baseball operations, the current person in charge of the big league or top league roster, they know who's going to take over. But this year of committing to the young players, I find it really fascinating that it's almost like an audition for them to be part of the next guy's core, right? Like, all right, they're performing. Now, does Heim Bloom want to build around them, or does he want to go, nope, I am going to move on from this and build my own core? It really seems like that, if not the intended, that's the fallout from this.
Yeah, because, again, as we talked about arbitration at the beginning and the process of guys getting further into that cycle, you've got to start making decisions and whether you're going to lock guys in. And so it's incredible. It's an incredibly dynamic time. You've got all of these things, all these young catchers in behind the guys that are coming up. And so you've created an opportunity for all of them to see a potential to keep moving up ladders. We're going to have a lot of fun covering all of it down to Double-A Springfield, right? Because there's going to be some worthy coverage there to see what's happening, worthy subjects to write about. You know, I got to think some of these guys are going to just the percentages. Derek, tell you that some of these guys are going to hit at least well enough to be part of the process of moving forward. Are there going to be a lot of guys who are going to end up getting Atlanta Braves contracts? Well, I mean, I think at some point Wynn's got to get one of those contracts. Does anybody else? Are you going to make that level of commitment? Are you going to start doing that, which you haven't done a whole lot of here? You haven't had guys, frankly, you could plug into that. And then we go down all the other questions, Derek. Going forward, can you get more out of the international marketplace?
Mm-hmm.
Can you get something done in the Pacific Rim, or are you just conceding that to the teams that can more naturally accumulate talent and keep talent, attract talent from the Pacific Rim? But you've got to do better in Latin America. You got to do better in everything. But you have a good group here. I mean, again, we're circling back. You've got a whole team full of guys you develop, and they're all at least replacement level or better. But can, besides Mason Wynn, who can become more than that? Boy, a couple of them have to. Just the percentages, Derek. Some of them, maybe just Lars or Nolan, or you know, or you know, just something's got to break for this franchise. You would think just on the percentages.
When you think about the extensions, and you know the Cardinals had expressed, and Brendan Donovan has expressed there towards the end of the season, the notion that maybe a multi-year deal would be appealing to both sides there, especially for what they thought and they think of his role in the clubhouse and his versatility and all that stuff. You know, Mason Wynn, you mentioned like if they're going to pull off some Atlanta type things, Mason Wynn, if Jordan Walker has a strong year, Nolan Gorman, they would all fit in there. You know, Jeff, it's been a, you know, sort of a rite of spring. Every year there's an extension of some type. Sometimes it's management. Sometimes it's front office. But, you know, you can go through the laundry list of folks, Adam Wainwright, Alan Craig, Paul Goldschmidt. All these guys have had extensions in spring. It's almost something that the Cardinals make traditional. If they don't this year, does that suggest that they're preferring to keep on the short-term commitment so that Bloom doesn't inherit some of this? It doesn't add complications for when he takes over and if he just wants to move on?
Yeah, I mean, you got to have a balance there. You have to have enough of a structure, I think, of younger guys so that you don't bottom out. You don't want to really just inflict a ton of pain on your fan base. And then as a result of that, all of your business partners in the Ballpark Village region, you don't want to tank all of your businesses there. So you've got to try to thread the needle that the Blues have tried to do with the help of the salary cap. They have to, you know, try to stay competitive while you're and build a group of younger players and then get the next wave in behind him and somehow try to keep things going well enough so that eventually those guys take over and you haven't hit the pavement with your franchise. So can they avoid hitting the pavement? Can they avoid just a disastrous year? I mean, fans here haven't seen real disaster. I mean, some other markets have really felt the pain. And sure, it's great for the Orioles. They have all these players now, or for the Royals to finally be getting someplace. But man, I don't think for a host of reasons, you don't want to put your fans through that.
Well, you bring up that spiral, and that's a real deal here. You know, I mean, if you're bracing for lower ticket sales and then you're trying to prepare folks for less competitive team, especially maybe coming out of the season, and the Cardinals internally, they believe April's such a big part of driving ticket sales later in the year. If they don't have a good April, then they kind of go, well, we're probably not going to all of a sudden spark fire and capture the imagination of folks who have already spent their entertainment dollar for July or August. But you can have a good April. You can start saying, all right, grow with this team or come see this style of play. Then maybe there's a bounce, but it's hard to kind of square that circle where they're bracing for a letdown in tickets, counting on a style or a new approach, such as grow with players to sell tickets. You can see how that would lead to further reduction of tickets and then a reduction in salary and on and on and on. And you mentioned that spiral. The other part of it is if you don't look at extending players now, they're only going to get more costly. If you don't make that move at the front end and then they go and perform, or you don't bet on your ability to get the most from them, like that's really what Atlanta does. Atlanta is like very confident in its ability for not only player development, but player amplification in the majors. They're like, we're going to get a return on this deal. If the Cardinals don't do that, then it only becomes more costly. And they have to either spend to outfit the roster or they have to spend to keep the roster. So that only adds another layer to the spiral you're talking about.
Yeah, you look at the cost of just getting guys to eat some innings, for instance, if you don't do a good job on the pitching side.
Right.
Look at the cost of just $20 million being the going rate for a number four starter. You know, and some of them get overpaid for a reason. Severino's because he's got to go pitch in Sacramento for a while for a terrible franchise, but he'll get paid handsomely to do so. But still, there's some crazy dollars. Guys who, you know, coming off injury, still getting $10 million a year, that sort of thing. So it is very costly. So all this has got to come together. And I think for shifting the pressure to the field staff, they've got to find a way to make the product more compelling as the growth continues, the hoped for growth. They have to help the team grow, but they have to make things more dynamic. I don't know if it's running more, being more athletic, as Ollie has pointed out, trying to juice just what fans are seeing, try to be, you know, whether it's successful, but or at times not as successful. But if you can see the aggression on the field, it would help sell the idea that this franchise is still ambitious. And that's a lot to ask your manager, who's going to be trying to develop multiple guys at the same time to reach their potential and also entertain fans who are going to be getting restless, to your point, if April doesn't go well. And so it puts a ton on the field staff too.
I like the way you put that a lot, Jeff, the notion of, you know, are the Cardinals going to try to send a brand that we're innovative and we're able to do more with less? Or are they going to sell a brand that they're ambitious? Because it sure suggests that the history and this city and the fan base sure responds to ambitious over innovative. I mean, they want innovative, right? But they don't want it. That doesn't exactly move T-shirts. You know, Goldschmidt moves T-shirts. Arenado moves T-shirts. You know, name brand players move T-shirts. I mean, some of the players who are homegrown and successful and are all-stars, they don't even have jerseys at the ballpark. So are they going to shift that too? I like the way you put that a lot, Jeff, the notion of, like, are the Cardinals going to show that they are ambitious, not just, you know, smarter than the other teams?
Yeah, Bill DeWitt Jr. makes a point of mentioning that they've always had premium players here, and they've been able to market them, and to the point of being perhaps overly nostalgic. But it's harder than ever to get those players because it's harder to get those veterans at the end of contracts when teams don't want them anymore because there's fewer of those guys that are going to be there to be poached. And it's, you know, I think the old model had run its course. So can they make a new model work? Can they develop the sorts of players, to your point last podcast, who will someday be in the Hall of Fame? Well, actually, you look back at this team and say, yeah, there's a guy that on that team that eventually made it.
There's the guy who kept the continuity going. Jeff, all right, so you say the percentages are on the Cardinals' side. Certainly, you throw enough quantity at a problem, you are likely to get some quality to emerge. Who you got? Like, what is a success? What do they need to have happen for this to be a successful year of quote-unquote player development traction? If everybody performs great, obviously, then they rolled Yahtzee and they're super happy, and maybe even they got a wild card bid. But let's say not everything happens right. What's a success? Is one emerging star, two? Is a future number two hitter? Is a future linchpin player for the lineup, a fulcrum player for the lineup? What are we looking at?
Well, I'll just put out a one guy, just which would be kind of the litmus test, and that's Jordan Walker. All the potential in the world rose like a rock, shot like a rocket through the organization, did a really good job offensively for his age in his first tour. Then everything goes bad. So now you're left wondering, okay, the old issue of there's promise, but how often is promise realized? Vast promise in his case, unrealized. And now you're wondering if that ceiling's much lower than you hoped for 2 years ago. I think you need to see if he could become a guy that could be like his buddy Mason Winn, where you can see clearly this is a piece. Mm-hmm. This is something, these two guys together with their personality, the way they can project, the fact that they're friends. If Jordan can join Mason and give him another key nucleus at a very young age, for me, that's what I'm looking at. I mean, it's oversimplification putting it to one guy, but he sort of symbolizes all of this, right? if he doesn't develop and he never learned to play outfield well, or he never figured out to make adjustments at the plate, that becomes an indictment of the organization and of the field staff and of everything, because this guy seemed to be on track. So that's I'm putting it all on Jordan Walker, Derek. It's unfair because, what is he, 22?
Well, that's kind of what I was going to ask, and I'm glad you brought that up. There is still a real stockpile of youth on this lineup or on this team. When you're counting on a couple of 22-year-olds, as you just said, to be the dynamic performers of the coming years, how far away is contention if that's the case?
Yeah, and again, now we talk about pitching and the fact that all of these guys have to pan out and then some, and then you're still going to have to invest in pitching. Mm-hmm. So then it comes back to the whole thing is, can this ownership group, I know this management team can put a competitive team together. I'm betting on Bloom to put a competitive team out there. But yeah, ultimately at the end of the day, will they take the steps, spend the money, invest, take the appreciation dollars earned over the years and put it to work as Scott Boras would want them to do? That is the great unanswered question, because I think that's through all of this too, we'll put it back to ownership. The test will come for them within the next couple of years.
I had a chance to talk with Miles Michaelis this past week. And one of the things that I was interested in, and after talking with him, went in and looked at just out of curiosity, is just the age gap between the rotation and the lineup that the Cardinals possibly could put forward. If the Cardinals are able to trade Nolan Arenado, if that's to the Red Sox, or if some other team emerges, or some team, decides to reposition itself either after Sasaki makes its choice and go with the dollars elsewhere, and then becomes a more likely landing spot for Nolan Arenado here in the next week and a half. We'll see. But if the Cardinals can make that move and start Gorman at third, then you're looking at a lineup of an average age of 24.2. Meanwhile, you have a rotation with an average age of 32, with only one player in their 20s and with three players older than that average age. Eric Fetty right there at the average age and Andre Pallante under it. What do you make of that disparity? I find it fascinating, almost as if the Cardinals are like, all right, we're going to have some volatility in the lineup, but let's not have that in the rotation.
Well, the direct parallel is the Blues, right? They've got all these young forwards coming. And they got a lot of old dudes on defense. They were able to go get a Broberg and steal him from the Oilers. But, man, you got a lot of 30-year-old guys making big coin on long-term contracts, and one of them who's injured. Same type of deal. It's hard to develop defensemen. And It's the hardest position to fill, and goaltending is very volatile. Is flip a coin. But finding consistently good D-men is hard, just like finding consistently good pitching. And so for the Blues, they've got to hope to develop all these young D-men that they went out and drafted this last year. They made a priority of it, that they have no choice. They have to, because these other guys are going to age out. Can the Cardinals do the same with pitching? They added a bunch of guys to the mix. None of them stayed healthy as far as what they brought in from the outside as young pitching. What will happen there, Derek, that will tell us a lot about, fixing that. Well, it will fix or won't fix this dichotomy you mentioned.
It was very interesting when I was pinch hitting on the Blues beat. I brought up that ice time is similar to innings. So ice time for a defenseman is similar to innings for the starting pitcher, in the sense that it gives a team something to build on without constantly chasing something that can completely unravel a season or wear a young player out. It gives them some latitude, just like a foundation. It's just basically something to build off of. And so naturally, after trying to talk through that and talking with people there around the Blues about that comparison, when it came time to ask Jake Montgomery of it, I completely flipped the phrases and asked him about defensemen getting innings and pitchers getting ice time, which was completely on brand. And that was my first introduction to him. So I'm sure he was thrilled to have a baseball writer stumble through a question. But I think there's something to it. It's almost like bringing, some sort of known buoyancy to a watercraft, right? Like you have to have some kind of ballast just to keep it on track, knowing that it's going to fit and, tumble and hit some crash into some waves of uncertainty and all that stuff, but you have to have the ballast. And one place to start with that is veteran starters. Jeff, I mean, we'll just close here. You know, this is so interesting in the sense that, like, really, this is a different approach than the Cardinals have had for 20 plus years. Certainly, you have to go back to the 90s, and even you could argue then that it was accidental or that it was more the ownership withdrawing and leaving them with very little to build off of. How does this kind of fit in your time covering the Cardinals and watching the Cardinals? Where does this year fit? And how would you say, how big a risk are they taking with a fan base conditioned and sold on a brand that's a lot different than what they're saying they're going to provide?
Yeah, I think I was surprised by this, the inability, the unwillingness to deficit spend to keep things in the right place. In this division, some deficit spending with the group in place could have assured this team a real shot at winning 90, 92 games and getting fans back to complaining about just barely making the playoffs instead of going deep, getting him back to that happy place versus the very unhappy place of missing entirely. So that part surprised me. To me, the worst part for this franchise had been Hackgate, some missed draft opportunities, some poor baseball around that period following that. And then there was a resurgence with the ability to go get Goldschmidt and Arenado. And the 22 team was pretty good with the pitching they brought in. Although that was, obviously Albert's finish. 22 was a happy place. And it was the franchise seemed to be right where it needed to be after that dark period in the previous decade where they frankly were embarrassed and should have been for what happened. And at that point, you're thinking, okay, everything's cool, right? And they got all these young guys coming along and, they could at least fill some spots. It's all good. And then it wasn't. So now what? And so it's the same ownership, new management coming, brand new organization in many ways underneath the top guy. It's the first reset for Bill DeWitt Jr. and his people. It is fascinating.
It is. It is indeed. And we'll have lots to talk about and lots to cover here at the Best Podcast in Baseball and on the video element that Jeff Gordon and I are going to do weekly during the baseball season. Jeff's going to be a regular co-host, regular guest here on BPIB. It's great to have him. You can find his work daily there at stltoday.com with his tip sheet. He also chimes in and writes a lot about both the Blues and the Cardinals, but also from the perspective of what they have to develop, not just from young players, but also like within their style of game. So I'm really looking forward to that, Jeff. Thank you as always for joining me here. This has been great. We kind of go rapid fire here. I'm getting used to the pace of having our conversations.
Well, I hope I didn't prattle on too much. I get excited, Eric. And, doing sports talk radio for decades, you just learn to keep going until the producer tells you it's time for a commercial.
See, I've been doing this podcast now for a decade, so I just like to monologue. That's all. I just sit here and monologue. So I'll just talk for 25 minutes straight and completely forget that I have a guest. You can find the Best Podcast in Baseball and all of my monologues wherever you get your podcasts. It's available there on Spotify, also available at stltoday.com. And, of course, through Apple and iTunes, you can get the podcast there. You can rate and review the podcast. Looking forward to hear back from folks about what they want from the podcast in the coming year as we race towards the 13th season of BPIB. You can also find all the constant Cardinals coverage, including the armada of writers that we're going to unleash upon the winter warm-up. We got columnists galore. We got Lynn Worthy in his new role as columnist, Benjamin Hockman. We'll have Daniel Guerrero and myself there for all hours, even into the late hours of the winter warm-up. And then, of course, Sunday night is the great writers' dinner honoring Ozzie Smith and Ryan Helsley and many others, including Bob Kendrick from the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum over there in Kansas City. You can find tickets for that at stlouisbbwaa.org. Again, it's St. Louis, S.T. Louis, BBWAA. Look for that on social media, and that'll guide you towards the tickets. We'll be back with the Best Podcast in Baseball soon. It's brought to you weekly by Closet by Design of St. Louis. Jeff, thank you so much. You got how's the plan for the post-dispatch development? I think we got some prospects for this year. I think
we're putting a lot on Daniel, right? I mean, this is we're just going to say, okay, it's your turn. You're going to get at bats. Daniel's getting at bats this year.
I am going to provide a lot of innings. That's my role. I think I'm gonna be able to provide the innings, so to speak. Quality, that's in the eye of the beholder, but I'll definitely give you quantity.
Well, hey, don't get some sleep in there once in a while, Derek.
I will. Thanks, Jeff.
Your old or broken phone can let you down when you need it most.
Perfect.
But at Verizon, trade in any old phone from our top brands and get the most for it, up to $2,000 in value, for an amazing new iPhone 16 Pro with Apple Intelligence and a new line on my plan, and iPad and Apple Watch Series 10. That's like a 3-for-1. And you can get it on any plan. At Verizon, trade in your old phone for a brand new iPhone 16 Pro, iPad, and Apple Watch. The other guys won't give you that. Visit Verizon.com today. Additional terms apply. Service plan required for Apple Watch and iPad. Up to $2,000 value based on iPhone, iPad, and Apple Watch.